Hey Dreamers, this is Jonathan Milligan from bloggingyourpassion.com, and you have a gift, and your gift is needed in the world. So keep on dreaming with the Dreamers Podcast.
This is the Dreamers Podcast, where dreamers share their stories to inspire you. Now, join host Joe Pardo as he interviews a dreamer who's living their dreams.
Hey Dreamers, I'm Joe Pardo, and today I'm talking with Lee Cockerell, who is making his dreams come true by, number one, and I am super excited to say this, even though he won't admit it, becoming a living legend in Disney history. And he's now using his expertise in management to help others around the world with speaking, writing books, and his podcast, Creating Magic. Glad to have you on the show, Lee.
Hey, thanks. Good to be with you.
And you're coming from California, right outside. I can't hear the waves, but I wish I could.
Well, I closed the window, but I'm in Carmel. I come out here every June, and I'm working on my fourth book, and it's just the kind of that great environment to write.
I'd imagine it would be, just getting to hang out by the beach and write books that help people be better at management and management in general. Are you able to say what your newest book topic is on?
Well, I think the title is going to be Creating Career Magic, how to survive the ups and downs of your career. You know, so many people have little obstacles along the way. They get fired, they have a bad boss, they get passed over, things don't work out the way they thought they would. And this book is more about don't get stumped by those obstacles. Pick yourself up and go out, because the best days are ahead. And I said, I survived being fired, not going to college. I survived being passed over. I survived bad bosses. And look what happened to my career. I ended up running Disney World operations for 10 years. So you never know what the future brings, so you got to keep pushing.
I agree. You can't back down. You can't just let it completely defeat you, especially if somebody's just standing in your way or standing on your throat. You got to be able to fight through it, and those are the things that are going to make you be the person that you are, that can go and do great things.
Oh, yeah, and, you know, I worry about a lot of young people today, which maybe they had the perfect life at home and everything went right, and they did good in high school and got out of college, and then they run into some boss that really doesn't love them like their mother did, and they don't know quite what to do. So, but I can guarantee you all of these things are going to happen to you in your career.
I'd attest to that for sure. Now, I got to ask, are they keeping Walt's body frozen at Disney World?
I think that's pretty unlikely.
Oh, okay. I was just checking. I figured if anybody knew, you
would
probably be the
one. I wasn't able to get into that room to check, but I think that's not probably possible.
Lee, I would love for you to go into a bit of your background and explain how you got to the point of running Disney World.
Well, I grew up in Oklahoma on a little farm, and my mother, I was telling people, was married five times, and I was adopted a couple of times, got the name Cocker when I was 16, but her fourth husband had money, so I got to go off to college, but I was a pretty poor student, so I dropped out after 2 years and went in the Army. After I got out of the Army, I met a guy in the Army. We were both cooks, and he invited me to go to Washington, D.C. with him, and we got jobs at the Washington Hilton up there. That's the hotel where President Reagan got shot back in, I think it was 80-something, 82 or 3. And I worked there as a waiter. I got a job as a waiter, and I'd never even been in a hotel before, but I faked myself in, I guess. They hired me, and I did that, and then eventually I got into a management training program with Hilton and worked for them for 8 years and did great. Moved around from Chicago, New York, Los Angeles, and then I joined Marriott and worked for Marriott 17 years, became vice president of food and beverage, and then Disney recruited me in 1990 and to go to France and open Disneyland Paris, and so I did that. I guess I did a good job because they invited me back to Orlando to run the operations there, which I did for 10 years, and then I retired when I was 62 back in 06 and started my own company. So that was the quick part of my career. Whizzed right by.
Well, I gotta ask, did it whiz by for you? Because working for 17 years at a place and coming up, I mean, obviously you've probably had seen a lot along those years, but did you ever get in that like a rut when you were working for 17 years for was it Marriott?
Oh, yeah. I got at one point where I got passed over for a big promotion at the end because I was too aggressive, I guess, and they weren't going to give me the job. And I really became uninterested in my work for a while, and I finally told them I didn't want to stay there anymore, and I went to be a general manager of Marriott, went and did my thing. And yeah, you can get bored. I was getting bored with it, and I was not happy because they weren't taking care of me like I thought they should. And sure, there's ups and downs. And by the way, when you're unhappy, bored, and maybe even depressed, time goes by really slow. So, and I'd say generally, it didn't seem like everything was going so slow until you get older. And the older you get, and when I look around today and I have a son that's 46 and grandkids in college, I know it went by pretty quick.
So I'm really interested to hear the story of, okay, so you get to Disney World to run it. What were some of the first steps that you took to, like, get acclimated? Because at that point you had been living overseas for a little while and, you know, just coming into this giant conglomerate and being like, okay, I got to wrangle this together.
Yeah, when I knew I was going there, I talked to everybody who had ever worked there, and they gave me a whole list of things to look into and see if that probably needed to be changed or improved. So I just had this yellow pad full of ideas. When I first got there, I didn't do anything. I just kind of took my time to get to know people. I had I called together managers every night for a few weeks, 300 and 400 at a time, let them ask me any question they wanted to. They could fax them into me because I wanted them to get to know me as quick as they could. I tried to tell them about my strengths and what I focus on and how I work. But I didn't make any big decisions probably for a couple of months, 2 or 3 months. I really always recommend to anybody in a new job, take your time to get to really know what's going on so you don't end up changing something you got to change back because you made a big mistake. So I spent most of those first few months getting to know people, trying to build the relationships, it's a very complex place. It's a city, you know, and it takes time. And I didn't know, I'd never been to Disney World until I went to work for them. I didn't tell them that in the interview, but I didn't know anything about parks. I'd never worked in a park in my life. And so it took some time. And then I started plugging away and working away and just kind of taking one thing at a time and trying to pick the ones that would make a big difference and fix them and move on and move on and move on. And I fixed a lot of things. I made a lot of things better. And I'm sure I left a lot of things that weren't done for the next person. So you just do the best you can. And that's what I did. And I was very involved in the total operations there.
Well, with the interview process, if they're not asking, you're not telling, right?
I wasn't. I didn't think. I said, oh, I've never been to Disney World. And but, you know, when we were young and married, and we couldn't afford it. We couldn't go. We lived in L.A. at one time, went to Disneyland a couple of times, but that's a big vacation. And so we just never went. Most of our vacations when we were young and married and up through the years were going to stay with relatives for free and get free meals. So, yeah. And even our son had never been to Disney World. he worked for Disney when he was going to college, and he called me one day and said, Disney's better, Dad. I got bad news for you. They're better than Marriott. I said, what? And he's with Disney now for 25 years.
Oh, so, wow.
And he told me when he was 14, he'd never do what I do for a living. So that just shows kids don't know what they're talking about. And he's got a degree in political science. So who knows?
Well, is he running the political end of Disney for them?
Hey, when you're with a big company, it's all political. So you got to pay attention to that. That'll take you down. And yeah, he's the VP of Hollywood Studios and doing great.
Oh wow! Well, I mean, they're Hollywood Studios is about to do some great things. They're right on the verge of getting a badly needed upgrade.
Yeah, you know more than I do. He won't tell me anything. So.
Lee, how did your family take it when you came back to the States to work in Disney World?
Well, my wife, you know, when I first joined Disney, my wife had never been to Florida, and she never thought she would be there. We never thought we'd live in Florida, but I guess after we went to France for 3 years, we should have assumed that the next move would probably be back to Florida. But we were great. I married a saint. We moved 11 times in my career. She's been great, and we loved everywhere we lived. You know, you spend most of your time at work or home anyway. I can't tell you, there was not one city we lived in we didn't really enjoy and have fun in. And we like moving around. We know those cities well. You learn a lot, experience you get living in different places. So it was terrific. And we love living in Florida. We've been there 22 years now. And Florida is an easy place to live. It's just easy, you know, no snow.
Now, do you go to the parks regularly?
I don't go so much. I go occasionally when my grandkids wanted to go, but they're old enough now. They don't want anybody to go with them. you know, they want to go on their own. But we go. I do a lot of work for Disney Institute. I have a contract with Disney, so I'm over there fairly often, either visiting a group, a client in the park, or speaking at one of the hotels, or we like to go to Epcot in the evening, maybe 4 or 5 o'clock, have dinner in one of the nice restaurants there, and then watch the fireworks. So anytime you get visitors in Orlando, which is everybody you ever knew comes there if you live there, and we take them over to see things. So yeah, we get there occasionally.
Yeah, you know, having friends that live in Disney, it's like you constantly are having people come into your backyard and wanting to go out and go see things and do things together. But one of the things that I've heard by living down there is you get to spend actual more quality time with the people that you care about than if you just live down the street from them.
Well, you know, I think we've seen all of our relatives and every friend we had. They came to visit us in two places, Paris and Disney. So, and they stay a long time. So, yeah, it's great. It's great, and it's special. I mean, it really is. Disney is special, and it's just a fun place to go. Even if you don't want to go and ride any rides, you can go have some great meals, some great dinners, some great music, all kinds of things going on there.
Lee, what's been the biggest roadblock for you over the years?
Well, you know, early on, I always worried about not having a college degree. I still have reoccurring nightmares about that, you know, 50 years later. But that was always a worry. And then it took me some time to develop my leadership style, too. I was pretty insecure when I started out, so I was kind of tough on everybody. I didn't think much about leadership. I probably abused people, intimidated them. So that was tough along the way till I learned. And the more success I had, I became more self-confident. My confidence improved. My self-esteem improved. I started to understand that I actually could make things happen and do things. And so just that learning of learning how to be a good manager and a good leader. I was always a good manager because I'm very organized. I'm really reliable. I do what I say I'm going to do. I follow up. I have a good personal system for setting my goals and getting them done and knocking them off. But I didn't always think about people the way I should have. And later on in my career, I did learn that lesson. I started treating people well, respecting them, and giving them authority. And life got better all the way around, and I got better results. So it's quite a life's mission to learn to be both a good manager and a good leader, in whether you're married, whether you're got children, or whether you're in the workplace.
Well, I mean, coming from a small business background, I would talk to a lot of people that were higher up in really big companies, much bigger than the company, you know, that my family had. And, you know, I could see sometimes people, they'd let their, I don't know if you'd say ugly side out, but their, I guess, I don't know, short-sightedness of treating people that, like, it's just kind of, like, dismissive.
Yeah, it's a problem with a lot of people. And you know what I think that problem usually is insecurity. It's just low self-confidence. That's why people, you know, I tell you, anytime somebody's screaming and yelling at you, it's a self-confidence problem. And I was lucky enough, I had a couple of mentors along the way that helped me with it and coached me over it and got me worked out of it. And it made my career 10 times better.
What were some of the things that they taught you how to, like, if somebody wanted to try to learn some of this on their own and maybe put, I guess, new sunglasses on or new glasses on to view the world, to bring more humility into their life and then in their management style?
Well, I think self-awareness is the first one. I think reflection, thinking about who you really are and trying to get somebody close to you who will tell you the truth about your attitude, your style, the way you react, the way you overreact, whatever those shortcomings are. If you're lucky enough to have somebody in your life, it'll tell you and help you with it. And I had a boss who really helped me not be so defensive. I really couldn't take feedback very well, and I'd get very defensive. And he really worked me out of it. One day he said, "Lee, do you realize the whole world's not about Lee?" And I said, "Oh, I mean, that hit me right between the eyes." And I say reflection, try to figure out who you are and what you can do about it and fix it. And if you can't do it, surround yourself by people who can help you with your weaknesses. And the other is anticipation, anticipating what's going to happen if you don't do the certain things and get better. And that's kind of reflection looking back and anticipation looking forward, and try to fix those things before they mess you up and before they before you're not able to get that next move because of some personality quirk you have or the way you treat people or the way you speak to people. Or a lot of times people don't have very good self-awareness and they get themselves in trouble. And it's a real key trait to have if you can understand yourself and try to get professional help or any kind of technical help or management help or leadership help to try to turn that around and become a different person than who you maybe you really are because of circumstances of how you grew up or education or your own insecurities from your family life. Who knows what creates all of these things. But reflection and anticipation will help you get kind of some things to work on every day.
I would agree. Being able to look at yourself from a third person and look at how you talk to people or the idea of demanding respect from people that you just like they don't know you or maybe they know you, but they knew you before you got like to this point of self-discovery.
Actually, I just put in my new book one little quote I wrote, "When you become a big deal, don't." Don't be a big deal. You can think about it in your mind, but don't show it to people. Humility is a big deal. Be humble.
It is, and it's very easy to get sidetracked, and it's very easy to sometimes display that to people that you're, you know, that they believe that you think that you're bigger of a deal than you really are.
The prisons are full of business people that thought they were a big deal.
I would agree. So, Lee, growing up, what was your childhood dream?
I didn't have any. You know, I was just grew up in Oklahoma. It was just the 50s, you know. It was like so innocent. I just thought you went to high school forever and life was great. And I really never had my family, you know. It was just kind of we didn't have an environment at home where anybody talked about the future or becoming a doctor or a lawyer or an executive or a professional. It was just like everybody in our family was kind of got along and survived. And then nobody ever talked about thriving. And so I really didn't have any. Best thing that happened to me is I left Ardmore, Oklahoma, went in the Army, moved to Washington, D.C. Man, that opened my eyes. I'd never been out of Oklahoma until I was 20 years old. I didn't know anything. I mean, what I didn't know was incredible. And then when you start to get experience and working at a big hotel in Washington, D.C., and then I lived in New York and L.A. and Paris, and you just grow and you grow and you grow and you become a different person. So I didn't have any vision at that time. I didn't even know what I could do, if I could do anything. And I didn't do well in college, which didn't help my self-confidence either, because I didn't have good study habits and I just kind of played around and had a lot of fun. So it just kind of came progressive. And, you know, maybe after 20 years of my career, I started to see that I had some talent and I could make a difference and I had a perspective. And so then it started to get better. But I didn't really have any. Today I know I can do some pretty good stuff and help people. And I really think today about being a teacher versus being a boss. When you teach, you really make a big difference in life. And boss, nobody wants to be bossed around, but everybody loves a great teacher. So that's what I think about.
Now, you say that it haunted you, that you didn't get a degree. I personally don't have a degree, but I am going to school to write that that quote-unquote wrong. What's your opinion of the way that the school systems are now, and not just the way that the school system is, but like, how, and by system, I mean, you go to school, you get your degree, you come out, and you're supposed to have a job. At least that's the promise that's being sold to everybody.
That's not happening anymore, which is now people are finding out that promise didn't work out too well, because a lot of college students, I think they're saying half of them graduating today are having difficulty getting a job that pays hardly anything. And I think to me, experience is important, and we're really working with our grandkids and my son to make sure they got good experiences, good early work experiences, tenacity, being able to hang in there, work hard. My grandchildren all work in the summers pulling weeds. They work in landscaping for $8 or $9 an hour, 6 a.m. till 2 p.m. And one thing they're learning is you got to be to work on time. And it's hard and it's hot. And we asked our granddaughter the other day, she's doing it this summer. How you doing? She said, it's hard, but I'll make it. You know, there's the right attitude. It's hard, but I'll make it. And so I think young people better think more about just a college education. They better think about getting those personal things under their belt, which is being able to put up with adversity, tenacity, hanging in there, being reliable, having a good personality, having a good relationship with people, and taking those low-level jobs. Get your foot in the door. That's what I told my son. I said, after he got out of college, I said, take a job with a big company. Don't worry about what they pay you. Just get your foot in the door. Getting your foot in the door and then showing people how great you are is half the battle. So sometimes you got a degree from some famous college. You may have to take a job that only pays $20,000 a year when you get out of college. But at least you get inside. Then you can show them how great you are, and then you get promoted. Because if you don't get inside, you don't ever have a chance to show it. And that's a hard thing for a lot of young people, because they think, well, I'll just come out of school. And that's why I'm writing this new book, Career Management. There's some things you got to do. There's some downsides. And sometimes you got to take, a lot of time the parents are the problem. They don't want their kids to be a hostess in a restaurant after they just spent $100,000 on their education. Well, get in there, be the best little hostess they ever had. Next thing you know, you'll be in a management. And next thing you know, you might own the restaurant. But you got to start somewhere. And by the way, most people don't have any experience, so they're not worth much in the anyway. So that's be worth something. The more experience you have, let me tell you, I would say travel and experience are the big ones in life. Education's great, going to college, but you can learn a lot if you wake up every morning. I said today, nobody has an excuse for not knowing. We all got Google now, so you can get smarter by the second. And I Google so many times a day because I run into words I don't understand. I don't know the definition. I don't know what's somebody mentioned something. I don't know what they're talking about. I go look it up. So you can get a lot smarter from the time you get up in the morning until you go to bed if you have that attitude, and that'll start to pay off. Be an expert at something.
I can't agree enough. The idea of people wanting to go to school for things that they have no business doing because they haven't done it yet, right? Like, people are like, I'm going to go to school to be a graphic artist. Okay, cool. How long have you been doing graphic art leading up to college? Oh, well, I was going to just go to college and get a degree and be, and be a graphic artist. And I'm like, if you weren't doing it already, the chances of you succeeding that are like slim to none. So you need to like start now. You need to figure out, and the experience that you're talking about, traveling and getting a more worldly view, not just of the world, but also of yourself, and understanding like, who am I and what do I do and what do I really love to do? And then applying that to something that can, make money.
Wow. And you got to be careful what career you choose. I mean, there's not a lack of graphic artists around.
Yeah.
So how much can you charge? Can you really make any money? Getting a degree in art, getting a degree in photography, getting a degree in some of these things, are they really going to pay off? And so you got to be careful that maybe some of those things should be hobbies while you get a real job. But I always talk about the jobs that actually pay the mortgage. And so that's a tough one. It's a tough decision to know what to go into and what to do. But if you can get enough experience under your belt, nobody looks for your degree when you make things happen. So nobody asked me about my degree in my whole career, actually. I was waiting for it, but they never did. So I was lucky. Now, I started in the 60s. I wouldn't recommend that to people today. I think you need both. You need a degree and experience.
I'm sure it was scary for you, because I've heard stories of companies like, not necessarily Disney, but big companies that are Disney-sized coming around and saying, okay, where's pony up the degrees. Where's your degrees? If you don't have a degree, there's the door.
Today at Disney or any company, many companies, you can't even get an interview if they see you don't have a degree. So that's why sometimes you don't have a degree. You got to step back and say, okay, I'll take the job in housekeeping, cleaning bathrooms. So now I'm inside. Then I can start to show my boss how great I am. Maybe I get promoted to a supervisor. Then I get promoted to a manager. So you have to work it a different way. If you don't, because it's hard to get inside for a professional job if they see you have it, and everybody has to apply online now, which is totally ridiculous. And those things don't work at all. You got to find a relationship, or you got to meet people, or somebody's got to walk you in the door and help you and be a mentor and support you. So that's why I tell people, get to know everybody you can. Know people. And that's how you get ahead.
I always thought that was ridiculous. The idea of like, okay, you got to fill out like an hour's worth of information on our website, to apply for one job and then go do replicate that for, like, you know, 50 other jobs that you might be potentially trying to get.
And the odds of you getting a job through that system are low. You'd be better. You'd be better going to Las Vegas and gambling.
That's a heck of a recommendation.
The odds would be better.
So, Lee, I have a couple questions that some of my listeners have asked that I ask of you. Patrick wants to know what your favorite attraction in Disney World is.
Oh, you know, I think when I get asked that occasionally, I think at the end, Rock and Roller Coaster was one I loved because I'd never been on such a ride when that thing takes off. I mean, it's exhilarating. For 1 minute, I'm sure I'm going to die. So, yeah, it's pretty cool. I like that one a lot. And, you know, different ones I had some emotional attachment to as my grandkids grew up, you know, when they were little. We Buzz Lightyear and that whole thing where you could compete with each other and score points. And so it depended over the years. And then if I had a granddaughter with me, of course, she wanted to go to one of the stores and buy pink dresses. So, and yeah, but I think Rock and Roller Coaster was a lot of fun. I liked that a lot. And Tower of Terror, too, when that first came in. That thing, yeah. I loved seeing everybody else screaming because they were terrified.
I didn't know. I thought you were going to say something like Carousel of Progress. Or
I love to go there just to get some air conditioning, sit down, and take a little nap. Watch it two times.
I love Carousel of Progress. It's probably one of my favorites, and partially because of the nap taking.
It is cool. I mean, I agree with you. I agree. We took our grandkids there, and they saw things they'd never seen in their whole life, like a telephone with a cord on it.
Or soon it'll be one with physical buttons.
Exactly.
What was the best idea for Walt Disney World that you got to see but never saw happen?
That I got to see that never saw happen? Well, I think this whole Fast Pass moving up to the Magic Band is probably one of the big things that you talk about. They spent $1 billion on that thing, and that strong move into technology. I wasn't there when that came out. They were starting to work on it. There was a team working on it, but just again shows the power of technology. And if you get enough smart people working on it and have enough money, you can come up with something brand new. It gives you a competitive advantage and actually does away with one of your biggest complaints, which at Disney is lines. And so I always tell people, make sure in business and in your personal life you're working on your biggest problem and make it go away, because if we make the lines get better, we get more people coming. And so that is, I think, pretty impressive how they have done all of that and took the risk to do it. That was a high-risk project.
Yeah, I mean, with that amount of money involved and lots of bugs hammered out in the first couple years of it, you know, testing and now being available, and they're still working through different issues. I mean, I seen somebody, or I had a problem with my Magic Band, the My Magic Plus app, where I had like two people that were the same person, but they were created twice. Oh. And I got to see the process that the person helping me had to go through utilizing an iPad. They had to like log into my account, log into the other person's account to delete and then relink them back up to be friends again. And I was like, wow, you're doing all that from an iPad. It seems like it would be a lot easier with a keyboard and a mouse.
Yeah, life has changed. And I think, you know, technology, you know, just look at Uber.
Yeah.
Where'd that come from? I mean, technology. I mean, incredible. New business is being created every single day through technology. And Disney, I think we haven't seen anything yet. I mean, they're going to continue to figure it out and come up with it and make the visit less complicated and more friendly and taking into account your time to make sure you're getting the most for your time and eliminating some of the things that are creating the wrong standing in lines and some of the things that aggravate people. And so, yeah, I think technology is going to continue to just make huge changes in service. Disney's goal will have to be to figure out when to use technology and when to keep humans in front of you. That'll be the key in life for all businesses, I think.
Yeah, definitely. I know you have talked a lot about that with customer service, especially on the phone end of it, like when you call customer service and who whether you're getting a person or a robot. And it seems like the two things that are most annoying, to me at least, is the whole, well, first you have to press one for English, and then after that you have to yell, you know, customer representative four times to,
if you're lucky,
to get somebody. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it doesn't understand you very well sometimes.
So Danielle was curious if the dreams that you had for Disney World when you arrived were fulfilled, as far as you're concerned.
Oh, I think many things happened. You know, when I got there, the parks and resorts were two different companies. We consolidated the whole organization into one. That was huge for not only for the guests, but it was huge for the cast members and for the management. Then their careers expanded because now they can work in a resort, they can work at Downtown Disney, they can work in a park. Back in those days, you could. You were isolated to either a park or to the resort. So that was a gigantic thing, organizational structure. And then our focus on leadership, really making sure that all the 7,000 leaders at Disney World understood that just being a good manager and getting things done wasn't good enough. You're going to have to, it's the way you do get it done, the way you treat people, leadership. So that was a huge, huge implementation, and it was painful for a lot of people that were leaders who just liked to push people around, tell them what to do, and those days are long gone, and that was pretty tough to go through, but it's one of the things today that makes Disney special is the leadership's great there, and the cast members rate their leaders very high, and on the survey every year, I think 97 or 98% of cast members say they would work for Disney again if they had the choice. That's huge. Because and mainly they have a high regard for the way they're led and respected and included and involved and listened to, and their opinion counts and all of those things. And so those are the big things we did. And then once you get great leaders in place, they do a lot of little things that just keep making it better every day.
Lee, Laura was curious as to who your favorite character is.
Well, Tigger, actually. I love Tigger because Tigger's really jumps around a lot and is pretty active and yeah, high energy. I consider myself pretty high energy, and I'm retired and I still get up at 5:30 in the morning and do my thing and exercise every day and have a strength trainer twice a week, and I don't know why I do all this. I guess I'm wired that way. So Tigger, he doesn't know why he does it either, but he does.
Laura was also curious, if you had to do it all over again, what is one thing you would have done differently?
You know, the problem with that answering that question, anything you would have done differently wouldn't have led to where you ended up.
Yeah, I agree.
I always tell people, if I hadn't dropped out of college, I wouldn't have gone in the Army. And if I hadn't gone in the Army, I wouldn't have gone to Washington Hilton, where I met my wife in the office next door. If I hadn't met her, I wouldn't have had my son, Daniel. And if we didn't have him, I wouldn't have three great-grandkids, and I wouldn't have ended up at Disney. I mean, you know, it's hard to say what would you have done differently. If I'd have done something differently, it would have taken me down a different path. I actually wrote a note to the guy who hired me at Disney, or I hired me at Marriott 38 years ago. I found him on LinkedIn yesterday and sent him a note and said, I haven't talked to you in 38 years, but I just was thinking about you today, and I just put your name in my new book, because if you hadn't hired me, I don't know how my career would have turned out. Because you gave me the chance to get into Marriott for 17 years and get some incredible experience. So, yeah, I don't think there is an answer to that question that makes any sense.
I'd agree. Our past is what makes up what we are and who we are today, and it's hard to just ignore it. You know, if things had gone differently, you're right. Things would be completely different for you, or could be.
Well, you know, people ask that question sometimes, who would you like to change places with in the world? Like, would you like to be, you know, Michael Eisner? Would you like to be Steve Jobs? Or would you like to be, oh, yeah, exchange totally, you mean? Like, give up your wife, give up your children, give up your grandchildren? I don't think so. So people only want a part of what they have, like their money. But I like to keep everything else.
Hey, more money, more problems.
Yeah.
Lee, what do your dreams for the future look like?
Oh, I'm pretty focused now on where I'm going. I'm really becoming more and more of an educator. I'm doing lots of work in education and in healthcare, helping colleges, universities. I'm doing a lot of work with universities. My books are all becoming textbooks. We've developed a teacher's guide for 1,200 professors around the U.S. I'm really enjoying doing workshops and seminars for colleges, universities, hospitals, places that are trying to improve patient care and do a better job for the students to get them on the right track. And so that's it. I can't think of something I'd rather be doing than teaching. It's just a lot of fun. And somebody said, Lee, why do you do this? I said, because my audience claps when I'm finished. When I played golf, nobody clapped. So this is much more fulfilling.
Now, before we get to how people can connect with you and plug all your websites and everything, is there any last thoughts you'd like to share?
I think a couple I always try to think about myself is, number one, don't underestimate what you can do in your life. You know, if somebody had told me way back in my life that I was going to run Disney World or I was going to be influential in teaching or in healthcare or in education, I would have thought they were nuts. Don't underestimate what you can do. It's incredible. Just pick yourself up. Keep getting smarter every day. If 10 people do what you do, you make sure you're the best one with your best attitude, on time to work, early, get your work done. Raise your hand when they need somebody to do something hard. And don't underestimate what you can do. That's just too many people shortchange themselves. Take some risk, you know. I was saying life without risk is a shame. So have some excitement and fun, and especially if you're young. Take those air check. You can get fired when you're young. You can get passed over. You can try a few things. As you get older, it gets harder. So you got to take those risks early and find out where your passion is. So that's the one I would like to tell people is pick yourself up and be careful where you get stuck. There's a lot of opportunity out in the world for people who go after it.
Oh, beautifully said. Yeah, you definitely have to be willing to get up and volunteer and say yes. And saying no is important too, and it has its place. But saying yes, the power of yes is can open up all kinds of doors.
Yeah, say no to the things that are a total waste of your time and not going to do anything for you, like spending 5 hours on Facebook and watching Kim Kardashian try to fix her life and those kinds of things. You can do those things as long as you're doing the big things that are going to make your career better and your personal life better and your health better. Somebody, you know, that saying, try to be healthy, wealthy, and wise, that's a good one to remember. Healthy first. And if you're wise, you might get wealthy. But if you don't have your health, let me tell you what, that's a big regret you're going to have in your life. Take care of your health.
Yeah, the people that forget the health generally don't last as long. They either burn out or unfortunately pass away too soon.
Yeah, life's stressful, so stay healthy.
Lee, I would love for you to plug your website and how people can connect with you, as well as your new and upcoming book.
Well, I'm easy to get a hold of. If you go to my website, which is leecockerell.com, you'll find anything you want on there. You can buy my books. You can buy my app. You can see my podcast, Creating Disney Magic, it's called, and there's episode. I have a blog on there that talks about everything about it, being a better leader manager. It's all on there. My contact information's on there, including my phone number, my email address, anything you want to get a hold of me. I'm easy. When you call me, I answer the phone. I'm one of those exceptions in the world. And that's how I book more business. I have four books. I'll have three already out, which is Creating Magic, Common Sense Leadership Strategies from a Life at Disney, which is in 14 languages now and around the world and in many universities. The second one, The Customer Rules, 39 Essential Rules for Delivering Sensational Service, which is doing great too. It's in 10 languages and many schools are using it. And then Time Management Magic, How to Get More Done Every Day, came out last January, and it's really helping people get organized and disciplined and figuring out how to get it all done, and which most people don't have a good system. They don't get the right things done. They don't work on the right priorities. And the last one, Creating Career Magic, How to Survive the Ups and Downs of a Career. And I think those many people, I guarantee I hear from somebody every day that says, I really loved your book. I bought it at Disney. I never thought about some of those things because that's why everybody should read. I did a podcast that said, Leaders Read. Read. That's the way you're going to learn more. That's the way you're going to have thoughts that you won't have otherwise, and it'll help you decide to go a different direction and do something you never thought about before. What you think is what you do. And when you do the right things, life gets better. When you do the wrong things, life gets worse. So you got to make those decisions. So read a lot. Google a lot, listen to podcasts like yours, one we're doing this morning, and all those good advice. It can make a big difference in your life. So that's me. And there's also on there about Thrive 15, which is a learning site I'm involved in. Thrive 15. Thrive, the letter, number 15. And it's over 600 videos on how to become a better manager, better leader. If you want to try it out, people can use the promotion code MAGIC and see if they like it. They can try it for 30 days. Thrive 15. It's a fabulous site. And we'll have 1,200 videos on there probably by the end of the year. And we work with David Robinson, who used to play down in San Antonio. He's a smart business guy. He's got 20 or 30 videos on there, how to be a better leader, better manager, how to handle crisis. There's so many good things out there. So take advantage of them.
I will have all that in the show notes, as well as the promotion code for Thrive 15. And that's astounding that you have so many videos already and already have plans to double that. As it is.
Yeah. I mean, I have 40, and I did a whole series a few weeks ago, six or seven, just on time management. Six 15-minute videos on how to get organized. And that alone will help people, I guarantee you.
I think I'll be taking you up on that because I need some material to read while I'm doing the elliptical or the treadmill.
There you go.
Lee, I can't thank you enough for coming on the show today. It's been an absolute pleasure having you.
Well, thank you. Thanks for having me, and thanks for doing this. I appreciate it. Let me know if you want to do it again one day.
I would love to have you on the show again, and follow up on how everything's been going for you. And I look forward to meeting you in person down at Podcast Movement in Texas.
Yeah, I'll see you in Fort Worth, and now I got to go to the beach.
Yeah, well, I hope you enjoy the beach and enjoy the rest of your week, sir.
All right. You take care, Joe.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the Dreamers Podcast. Follow us on Twitter at Dreamers Podcast. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/Dreamers Podcast. If you or someone you know would like to be a guest on the Dreamers Podcast, please send an email to j@jpar.co. This podcast is copyright 2014 by jpar.co.